There's been a lot of discussion in the media recently about proposed cuts to humanities and arts degrees at universities, as well as increases to the cost of these degrees, and it's something we've talked about quite a bit on this program. But my next guest argues there's one particular field of study that should not only be preserved but used widely if we're to tackle some of the biggest problems facing us today, and that field of study is anthropology. Gillian Tett is a journalist. In fact, she's currently the chair of the editorial board and editor-at-large of the Financial Times in the United States and well-known to Saturday Extra listeners. But before she entered the world of journalism, she studied anthropology. And she says this helped her to foresee and make sense of things like the 2008 financial crisis, like the election of Donald Trump, the digital economy, and the rise of the sustainability movement. She joined us earlier and under some trying conditions, so apologies for the slightly unstable line, and I welcomed her to Saturday Extra.
Well, it's great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me on.
It is wonderful to talk to you again, but I certainly didn't imagine I'd be talking to you about anthropology. What initially drew you to that subject?
Well, anthropology is probably one of the least understood of the social sciences and humanities. You know, a lot of people think it's basically like Indiana Jones for academics, in the sense of what anthropologists do is go off to wacky and weird parts of the world to study what it means to be human. And I've got to be honest and say that what first attracted me to it was this image of Indiana Jones, of adventure and travel and excitement. And I went off and I did research, first in Tibet and then in a place called Tajikistan, just next to Afghanistan, very much looking at what made other people in other parts of the world tick. But along the way, I discovered actually that's a really wrong impression of anthropology, because what anthropology does is look at what makes all humans operate, function, tick, if you like, including people in the type of industrialized Western society that I come from. And exactly the same skill sets that you can use to study how people who seem different to you operate and live, those same skills can make sense of Wall Street, Washington, companies, almost every area of modern life.
I also studied anthropology at university, but I did find it was very diffuse to explain to people and frankly to myself at the start. I noticed you have this lovely little definition, more or less, in your book. Anthropology is an intellectual framework that enables you to see around corners, to spot what is hidden in plain sight, gain empathy for others, and gain fresh insights on problems. Now, that wasn't how my lecturers explained it to me, I'll have to tell you that. You've discerned that, have you?
Well, the problem with studying culture, which is what anthropology does, is that culture is everywhere but nowhere. It frames the way we think and act, and we take it for granted because our cultural assumptions are the ones we inherit from our surroundings and just don't think about. So it's kind of hard to define. One of the things anthropologists do is to try and take a holistic view of life. They look at everything and see how it interconnects. And far too many of the tools that we use today to make sense of the world are basically tunnel vision tools defined by specific models or balance sheets or data sets that we use to look at the world. And the reason why that's dangerous is because the world is constantly changing. And no matter how good your model is or your data set might be, if you have a rigid model or data set, you can end up missing half the things that matter. To give you an example, you know, economists have spent years arguing that environmental issues were, quote, externalities because they weren't in the model and they thought they could ignore them. But what we've realized is that actually environmental issues matter enormously. So that kind of anthropologist mindset of looking at everything to see how it's interconnected is really badly needed in today's world. Or the metaphor I use is that if you try to make sense of the world by using economic models or narrow corporate balance sheets, say, it's a bit like someone walking through a wood at night with a compass. Compasses are useful. You don't want to throw them away. But no matter how brilliant your compass is, if you just stare at that dial and look down, you're probably going to walk into a tree.
Mm. Look, there have been instances where anthropology has been used to shape policy and programs to great effect. One of those you cite was the Ebola pandemic in 2014 in Africa. Now, can you remind us, please, what happened there?
Well, essentially, the Ebola pandemic of 2014 is incredibly relevant for COVID-19 because essentially Ebola hit West Africa. Initially, most people in the West kind of ignored it and assumed it was, quote, an African problem. And the Western medical establishment threw medical science and data science at the problem, trying to fix Ebola or stop it. And it failed. In the first few months, Ebola kept spreading and spreading. And eventually the doctors realized that the reason their efforts to stop it were failing was because they ignored the other crucial component of beating a pandemic, which is looking at behavioral science. Because you can't beat an epidemic or pandemic just with medical science. You need to persuade people to change their behavior and work out if they're not, and if not, why they're not. So eventually, after 6 months of trying and failing to contain Ebola, the doctors and the World Health Organization and others changed their policies, embraced cultural analysis and behavioral science, and made a big difference. The tragedy is that if you fast forward to COVID-19, that lesson about the need to employ behavioral science alongside medical science and data science was actually forgotten in the early months of the pandemic. And there was a real failure for the West to learn the lessons from other parts of the world in how to respond. I mean, one of the values of getting empathy and understanding for other cultures that seem different from you is that you can learn lessons. And if only there'd been more thinking like an anthropologist at play in Western governments, I think the COVID-19 pandemic would never have got so bad.
Oh, can what way specifically do you think we could have altered things?
I'll give you a tiny example. Masks, wearing masks. Anthropologists have studied what's happened in Asian epidemics and pointed out that wearing a mask is not just beneficial from the point of view of medical science, in the sense that the fabric stops germs or viruses, but also the psychological impact of wearing a mask prompts people to change their behavior. And the cultural signaling shows that people are trying to support and respect group norms and their responsibility to a wider community. And that knowledge was actually very well outlined by anthropologists working in Asia several years ago. But fast forward to the beginning of 2020, and not only did many people in the Western world think it was impossible for their populations to embrace masks because they seemed so weird and different, that's another bit of sort of prejudice, but also people failed to realize this kind of triple benefit of mask wearing. And countries like the UK were very slow to actually embrace them. And that's just a tiny example.
Let's just you would tell listeners it's Gillian Tett I'm speaking to, whom we used to speak to a lot from the Financial Times, but she's now talking about anthropology. And look, you know, it's interesting, Gillian, that one of the things that I learned from anthropology is that you can chart these changed routines and codes and etiquette without necessarily agreeing with them. So, because what you're describing, people might say, oh, well, you become a massive advocate for them and you change our culture, etc. I don't think that actually does flow with anthropology, does it? It's simply the business of respecting difference sufficient to chart it in order to throw more light on something.
In many ways, what anthropology tries to do is uphold an idea that Genevieve Bell, who's a great Australian anthropologist who worked at Intel for many years, tried to point out to people inside that company, which is this: just because it's your worldview, you can't assume that it's everybody else's worldview. Having the ability to recognize that you are a prisoner of your own cultural assumptions and your heritage, but other people may have different ones, can be amazingly powerful and liberating, even if you don't agree with the way that other people see the world. And just to give a very practical example of this, in the last 18 months, we've all suffered collectively a massive burst of culture shock in that COVID-19 pandemic has been really very shocking. And what that's meant is that we've been forced to recognize that all the things we've taken for granted about how we structured our lives pre-pandemic, they're not set in stone. it is possible to imagine alternatives. We might not like the alternatives, but they exist. And many of us have seen cultural patterns change. And yes, that's scary, because guess what? Culture shock is always scary. Looking at other people's ways of life and culture is always challenging, and people naturally shy away from it. But when you try and embrace it, that can be very liberating too.
Let's look at where it might take us. One of the main ways you think it could be used today is in the context of the digital economy. It could help economists, you suggest, broaden their lens beyond money and markets and consider a wider range of exchanges. Particularly, you introduce this notion of bartering, which is terribly important in many more traditional cultures. Now, why does this matter?
Well, there are so many ways you can use anthropology to understand the digital economy. I mean, you know, the most basic way is the fact that when we go online, we tend to take with us all of our tribal allegiances and social patterns and actually intensify them online. They don't disappear. But another way to use it is by looking at social media and the digital economy. And economists have a real problem in making sense of what's happening in the digital economy, because much of it today is not mediated with money, and economists tend to study money. So if you think about the fact that actually most of us, when we go online, are swapping our data every day for services, we give up our data to Facebook or Google and get back supposedly free services from them in exchange for that, those are exchanges that for the most part are not tracked by economists because there's no money involved. However, if you use the tools of cultural anthropology, you can see that in many ways what you have going on is a massive barter trade. And people don't like to talk about barter because it sounds old-fashioned. But in reality, it's a really useful tool for framing the digital economy, because it first of all shows us how important these trades are. But also, until you start talking about barter trade, you can't start talking about how to create a more ethical and acceptable digital economy. And I think most people today don't want to abolish the barter trade. They don't want to put money back into it. But they do want to change the terms of the barter trade by making it more transparent to consumers and giving them choice. And I think one of the things that should happen is that tech companies should be forced to do what banks do, which is to allow consumers to actually carry their data around with them as they change providers. And the onus is on the tech companies, just like banks, to help consumers make that switch if they want.
Okay, that certainly set us with plenty to think about. I must say, maybe I could ask you, by way of drawing this to a close, how do you think we might encourage more anthropologists into, say, government or onto boards to make the ideas of anthropologists more prominent in public debate? Are you suggesting that it really could improve the whole operation of the financial system, or just more alert to all the different component parts of it?
I think it would make policymaking a lot wiser. I think it would make companies better run. I think it would enable financial markets to work in a more fair, transparent, effective manner. For the most part, anthropologists are not working inside government and financial companies and, you know, non-financial companies in senior roles, precisely because people with a degree in anthropology are seen as being a bit wacky and weird, but also, frankly, because many anthropologists are very wary of working for big companies, because the type of personality who wants to go and sit in, you know, some unusual part of the world and study other people tends to be patient, humble, good at melting into the background, and prefers to observe others rather than stand on a podium and talk or appear in a radio show. And so anthropologists are often very wary of pushing themselves into the limelight. But one of the things I argue in my book is that anthropologists really have to get out there and hustle today, get their ideas out, even if that requires them to make some compromises. And also, anthropologists have to get much better at working with other disciplines, because I think the magic really comes when you add anthropology to, say, economics or finance or computer science or medicine. Those are the magic combinations that really have the ability to create better policy going forward.
Yes, I think we could have a heavy dose of anthropology needed with vaccine hesitancy and with the sorts of things that are absolutely perplexing communities across the world, but certainly here in Australia.
Absolutely. And believe me, in America, it's probably even more intense issue about vaccine hesitancy. And it shows this core point that you can't beat a pandemic just with medical science. Mm. You need medical science plus behavioral science and computer science. And it's not an either or. It should be a combination. And last but not least, I would actually salute an Australian who I think, you know, you guys should feel very proud of, which is Genevieve Bell, who is now working at an AI institute within the Australian academic system, trying to combine analysis of artificial intelligence with what I would call anthropology intelligence, the two AIs together. And that, in my mind, really is the future. So frankly, you know, Australians should feel pretty proud of that because it really is pretty pioneering right now.
Yes, we shall take that on board. Gillian Tett, lovely to chat again and, as always, very thought-provoking. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And Gillian Tett is editor-at-large of the Financial Times in the US. Her latest book is Anthrovision: How Anthropology Can Explain Business and Life. It's a Penguin Random House publication. One of our texters has said, love the anthropology connection. It's all about it's all reminiscent of Isaac Asimov's Foundation series. Thank you, Megan. Yes, I think the more we can have, the better.